G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
realfaith.org.au Vanuatu culture is very, very particular, and you can only understand it once you've lived here for a certain period of time. And learning that culture over time is the only way you can survive here long term, and adapting who you are as a person, which I've had to do certainly over the last 18 years to survive here and be married and bring up three beautiful children that we have.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, last time, retired dentist Dr. Graham McLennan and his wife Pam shared their story and about the numerous ministries they've been involved in over the years. One area they've been heavily involved in is Vanuatu, and there's a good reason for that. That's because their son Michael lives there along with his wife Rita, who was born there. So today we're going to hear Michael's story and how he met and married Rita on the island paradise of Vanuatu.
Am I your special island? Come to me, come to me.
Michael McLennan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Eric. It's been a number of years since we last spoke, and I really appreciate our previous conversation all those years ago, and I'd like to thank you for being invited back to the program.
Glad to have you with us again, and I should say that you're coming to us from the island of Vanuatu right there. You're sitting on a beach somewhere under a coconut tree, is that right?
Well, I could tell you I'm living in a little hut, little grass hut, and my wife has got her little island skirt on, and I'm eating coconuts and lap-lap and just having a great time. But in actual fact, I sort of have a very similar life that I might have in Australia, normal house and normal kind of life, normal car, and life is fairly similar.
Mm-hmm. And so you're talking to us from your office?
Yeah.
Not as romantic, but hey, let's just tell it like it is.
Yeah, we do that.
But you are in Vanuatu.
Yeah, I'm in Vanuatu. Beautiful country, lovely weather, and beautiful people as well. It's just a really nice place to be.
Yeah, wonderful island and very hospitable, friendly people there on the island of Vanuatu. Now, we're going to speak more about the island of Vanuatu because it plays a big part in your life. Obviously, you're there and your wife, Rita, is from there. But let's go back to your childhood. You grew up in Orange in New South Wales. Is that right?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that I came from a place called Orange because, you know, when you say the word Orange to people, if people know where Orange is, it's about 4 hours west of Sydney. Mm-hmm. The first thing that people always say is, it's so cold. And how on earth do you live in a place that's so hot? And I remember when I grew up, I was like, I'm never living in a place like Northern Queensland. I'm never living in a place that's hot, stinky, smelly, where you sweat a lot. But I loved growing up in Orange. I love the weather there, and it's a beautiful city. Mm-hmm. Very, very cold during winter, obviously, but somehow when you're a kid, you don't feel it.
What are your other memories of growing up in Orange?
Well, I do remember the cold, and I'll still get back to that because,
okay,
you know,
right.
Like there's nothing better than building a snowman.
And when you have kids
that grew up in another country, you talk to them about the snow, and I guess you take them to the freezer and show them what the snow is like. But thankfully, we're able to go back to Australia, and I've taken the kids to the snowies and things like that and taken them back to Orange where it has been cold. And it's been great for them to be able to experience all that. But, I loved growing up in Orange and experiencing snow, which a lot of Australians don't ever get to see or experience. So
yeah,
it's a great thing.
Oh, I didn't realize there was snow in Orange.
Yeah, we get it pretty much every year. Sometimes it doesn't settle, but we've got the highest point, which is Mount Gonoblis, and that's where we have a Christian radio station broadcasting from. And mm-hmm. It's the highest point west until you get to Madagascar. So it's
has
a good altitude.
Oh,
and,
wow.
It receives snow every year up there, and mm-hmm. if you can't get snow down where you live in Orange, then you can go up the hill, and sometimes they get a foot or maybe a foot and a half of snow all the way to the top.
Okay, I'm learning all kinds of new things here today. So now, getting back to your childhood, besides the snow, we know that your parents obviously are Christians and you were brought up with a Christian heritage. Tell us about your faith growing up.
I think that's one of the things. When you grow up in a Christian family, you grow up in a Christian context. You always have the gospel shared to you. I can't, in the life of me, remember a particular time that I gave my life to Christ. I think that's a decision that I always continually made as a child growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, when your mum prayed with you and you sat down with her and she explained the gospel to you and you made that decision. And I can remember going to church and plenty of times when you sit down with your parents, you make that decision, you know, multiple times. I think that there's a period of time when you grow up where you make a recommitment because you make that choice, a decision that you want to choose for your life and a calling that you want to choose for your life. And I think that's where the real decision comes in, is where you say, yes, this is the path I've chosen. And then you choose to go that direction. And that happened when I was a teenager. And later on, I became baptized in Orange in middle of winter outside in a pool of water that was very, very cold.
Oh, wow.
And everyone was very surprised to, like, why would he get baptized at this time of year? And I'm like, well, because why should it make a difference? But, it was very special.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what did you think about all these Christian projects that your father was involved in, radio stations, Christian schools and all that? What did you think about all that?
I never thought it was odd. I only ever think it's odd when somebody else says, why is your dad involved in so many things? Because I asked my mum about myself, because sometimes people say to me, Michael, you're doing too many different things. And I'm like, I can't really function unless I am. And I think that's what mum says about dad. He just says he doesn't really feel that way. You know, he has a certain makeup about who he is and he's happy being like that. And I think the other thing is you're not always doing all those things at once.
Yeah.
You might be doing 1 month of this and 2 months of that. And it kind of relieves the monotony of just one thing. So you might have done a whole lot over your lifetime. It looks like you've been involved in 10 different things. But in actual fact, at any one time, you may only be involved in one or two.
Hmm. So you're kind of carrying on his tradition, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that you can't really always put a finger on yourself and the way you're made up. But I seem to be able to multitask different things at one time. And I feel completely fine at that. I think the downside of that sometimes is that maybe you're not as fully committed in one area as you should be to excel in that one thing. That's maybe a negative, and that's where you kind of need to have people that support you in what you do. And, you know, Dad's done an amazing work in what he's done with things like NACL and Christian history research, but at the same time, people get older and they need help with people that can come on board to continue what you've begun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where the calling is.
And as a young adult, you were involved in politics and also photography?
I was always involved in some area of Christian ministry at all times, and usually multiple. So I was involved with Christian radio. I was involved with the Christian Democratic Party in politics. And I just wanted to be able to serve God in areas that influence society, whether it be education, the media, like yourself with the media, and areas that influence society as a whole, not just confined to a building, but something bigger. And as you know, like, the great thing with radio is you can meet people inside their house. You can meet people inside their car.
Yep.
And these people may not ever go into a church building or into a Christian bookshop, but you can meet them where they are in the house and speak to them directly in a way that no other medium can do. And this is sort of a failure I see of the Christian church as a whole is that we're not always meeting the needs because we're not looking outside of the box.
Yeah.
And Christian media, Christian education, Christians involved in politics, Christians involved in other areas are able to do that. And that's where I sort of felt my calling was.
Our guest today is Michael McLennan, who is sharing his life journey. We just heard about his background growing up in Orange and New South Wales with Christian parents Graham and Pam McLennan. Next, we'll hear about a short-term missions trip he took to Vanuatu and how he met his future wife, Rita. All that and more is coming up when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and today our guest is Michael McLennan, who's sharing his life journey. Before the break, we heard about how he grew up in Orange in New South Wales, which has a reputation of being pretty cold. Next, we'll hear about a trip he took to a very warm place, Vanuatu, in the South Pacific.
Am I your special island? Come to me, come to me.
Now let's get to the part we've all been waiting for. What led you to go to Vanuatu and meet a certain young lady?
Well, I didn't come to Vanuatu to meet a certain lady.
But, you didn't know it at the time.
I didn't know that at the time, but I originally came invited by this Presbyterian church in Springwood, and they were doing a school building project, and they needed a teacher to help with the kids' education. And it was a three-month project. You could volunteer for 3 months. I think I volunteered for about 6 weeks. And it was just to basically help build a school and teach the kids reading. And I had a teaching degree by that time. And so I thought, well, it's only, I think, $900. I'll go and I'll help out, help build this school and teach the kids basic literacy. And there was a lady that was friends with the people that organized it, and she was local. And she worked for the airline, which was Air Vanuatu. And she spent a couple of weeks out there, and we spent a lot of time together. And she was also an ex-teacher, and that's now my wife, Rita. And we held a long-distance relationship for 3.5 years.
Hold on, Michael. Hold on. We need more details here. So you're working with her. She's just a colleague, a co-worker in ministry. When did it go from a colleague to something more?
You know, I can remember the first day when she turned up, and I saw this girl at a distance. And because in Vanuatu, everyone is short, and she was really tall. She had a beautiful figure. She had the most amazing smile. And I was up on this building constructing this this school building. And a couple of minutes later, they asked us to come down and introduce ourselves to this girl that had arrived. And that's how we first met. And yeah, we spent lots of time together just going on walks and stuff like that. And I guess that's where, you know, you sort of begin to like someone, and then you hold hands and you just fall in love. And yeah.
So romance flourished on the beautiful island of Vanuatu.
You could ask my dad, but I mean, like, I caught the Bali High fever.
Bali High may call you any night, any day.
I really did catch the Bali High fever, and you know, you have all these images of what that Bali High fever is.
Now, you should explain. That's a song from the South Pacific movie where somebody is on an island and falls for a local girl.
It's been a long time since I've watched the movie, but that's the gist of the story. And you asked my dad, he said that's what sort of happened to me. But she was beautiful, and beautiful character, and really nice smile. And I didn't realize at the time how much of that happened to culture, but she agreed with everything I said, and that was the best bit.
Now, turning to a little bit more serious topic, this is a interracial relationship. She's Melanesian, dark, black, like my wife. My wife is from St. Lucia in the Caribbean. So you had to make the same decision that I had to make, to date somebody and eventually marry somebody of a different ethnicity, a different race. How did you feel about that?
It's hard to answer that directly. I think when I was in the village, there was a pastor who was there, a Presbyterian pastor, and he asked me a question. And it was in reference to this girl, who's now my wife, who I'd been spending time with, and he said, "What do you think about that girl?" And I can remember responding, to him by saying, when you choose your wife, you choose your future. You choose the direction of your future. And I said, I don't really see anything wrong with Vanuatu as a future. I can't see any warning bells. I can't see anything of why I shouldn't commit to that as my future. And that's kind of like the decision that I made, I think, then, is that it just seemed like a reasonable way forward.
And so the whole racial thing, it didn't sound like it even entered your mind. You were more concerned about her being the one for you and who God put in your life.
I think the priority always is someone's faith when you're a Christian, and whether you're equally yoked. Maybe the downside to that is the naivety of not understanding cross-cultural relationships or the culture itself. And I can say that after having struggled through a long-distance relationship, because we were a long distance for 3.5 years. I was living in Orange, she was living in Port Vila. And the second part of that is when I got married. And there's this huge cultural gap, which took me years to understand. And I would say I probably really only understood after 10 years in terms of making our marriage work in a way that made our marriage a lot better. Because there's always difficulties. And I think there's more difficulties if you're cross-cultural.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Although, actually, I would say that there's certain advantages. One of the things that you know you're going to face in a cross-cultural marriage is you're going to be freaked out from time to time at things that are done differently. But I think that's kind of an advantage because you go into it knowing, I'm going to be freaked out from time to time. You expect it.
I think it's crazy that just how different things are and how even to the point that you don't get accepted by other people. I was in Sydney once and we had our daughter, who was about 6 or 7 at the time, and she was pushing her own stroller around. And I didn't ever realize how differently people perceive you as a couple until this one day when she's pushing a stroller around on her own, nobody could find the parent. And all these people are asking each other, where's the parent? You know, where are they? And, you know, somehow they finally looked over at this middle-aged guy, me, when I shouted out, Grace, I'm over here. And then they're like, oh, there's the parent over there. But Chinese people marry Chinese. English people marry English people. Black people marry black people. And that's all you ever see. You very rarely see black people marrying white people. And we're the exception. You and I are the exception. It's just you don't see that often.
Yeah, some people thought that my wife was like the babysitter for our children.
Oh, my wife says it all the time. Like if somebody turns up to the house, she goes, oh, I'm just the house girl.
Well, she has a good sense of humor about it all.
No, she just says that it's a joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for the reaction. And sometimes they never figure it out. but it is funny.
So what year were you married?
Yeah, we were married in 2002 in February. Yep. And it was interesting. We had a local wedding, which I didn't organize anything from my end. So I didn't know what to expect. But it was very, you know, mixed between European and local. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful time.
Well, time has really flown by a lot, so we have to kind of wrap up our conversation. But you've been obviously living there in Vanuatu since you were married in 2002 and involved in various Christian ministries. Is that right?
Yeah, I've worked initially. The first thing I did was set up the Christian radio station here and worked with that for a long period of time. Initially, we started, we had probably about 60% of the listenership in the very beginning. And back then, there was only one other station, so that was very, very easy to do that. And the other thing that I've been involved with is Bible printing projects. Initially, I'd hear stories of people who went to the islands and they'd tell stories about going to churches and not finding any Bibles. They're literally, if people were asked to bring a Bible to church, there might only be that one elder, two elders that would have a Bible and just the pastor, and that was it. And literally that was it. And so when I heard this, I was like, well, how can I stand by idle and not do anything about it? So I tried to work with the Bible Society of the South Pacific to get permission to reprint initially a book of the Bible. And that accelerated into getting partners on board, other churches involved in overseas and in Australia, to undertake a printing. And we did 65,000 copies of the Gospel of John. We did a nice big print that's easy to read, lots of pictures, and a glossy cover, and we distributed those. From that, we then went into doing a full Bible printing and New Testament printings, and we've done probably over about 200,000 pieces of scripture in the last 10 years since I've been here.
Wow. So having an impact there, kind of carrying on the same tradition as your father, being involved in many different ministries at the same time. Finally, you had a significant moment in your life was when in 2015, Cyclone Pam hit. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really psychologically traumatizing to really think about it. It's that devastating what it did to the country. And when you talk about it, it's something that sometimes you just don't want to think about. But I remember the night of the cyclone. I mean, for years, my wife would tell me, Michael, you've not been through a cyclone. You don't know what it's like. And I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But the thing is that Cyclone Pam was a very big system. It lasted about 5 hours and just continued with such intensity.
Yeah.
And it was just huge. When you get to the point that coconut trees are broken in half, it's an intense, a very, very intense cyclone. And during the cyclone, you know, where the wind buffeting on our building at, you know, 350 kilometers an hour, just incredible intensity, we saw this light up in the sky and it was moving around. And my wife was like, come, Michael, look at this light. I think it's, you know, I think it's a sign or something. And I was like, okay, I'll stop mopping the floor. And the kids were coming out and we yelling at them, telling them to get back in their room. It was the only room that was dry in the house. Well, we were busy trying to look after the house. It was being inundated and raining in the ceiling and everything else. And and I looked outside and it was like, looked like there was this beacon from a helicopter up in the sky. And I'm like, what on earth is that? And my wife said, I think it's an angel. Afterwards, I can say it was like the peace in the midst of the storm. And that's what it felt like at that moment, just to stop and look at it. And it was just bemusing. Looked at it 10 or 15 minutes, then it turned off. And I was like, honey, I don't want to say it's an angel or something like that, because I'm going to probably wake up tomorrow and find out there's a completely natural explanation for it. You know, like San Elmo's fire on the top of a mast or something like that, because we had we had a big tree outside. And the following morning, woke up at like 4 o'clock, daybreak, and most of the wind had stopped by then, and there was a boat basically on almost on our front lawn.
and so
the top of the mast was the beacon. We'd seen them the night before, and this guy was in his boat and looked completely bedraggled, and we helped him stay and try to look after him as he tried to pull his boat back out over the course of about a month out back into the ocean. But it just felt like you get that moment where you have the peace in the midst of the storm, is what I'll say. And then to be able to reflect on that from a spiritual perspective, that Jesus is the peace in the midst of the storm when there are storms in your life. Because the whole time I'm frantic about the cyclone. And my wife is like, Michael, what's your problem? Don't you trust God? Because my wife always is like that. She's completely spiritual that's about it.
Same with my wife. Yep. We've been blessed, Michael.
Trust God. So my wife would be like, see, you don't trust God because I'm so anxious about what's going on, stressed about it and trying to keep mopping the floor and falling over and getting annoyed and all that. And, you know, honey, why aren't you helping? You know, this is really important that my floor's lifting up or something. Because by that stage, our whole lounge room is just a pool of water that doesn't have a drain.
Wow.
And the whole ceiling is just leaking like it's raining inside your house. It was really severe. And the next morning when you wake up, it's like a bomb has gone off. Everything is just destroyed. It just looks like a bomb has gone off and all the trees are down. Everything's down. It just looks like everything's destroyed. It's really quite, you know, to get PTSD or something, there's a number of people who sort of live through it here and they have psychological problems as a result of what they experienced that night. It's really something.
But you felt that peace.
Yeah, I think that my wife made me. She had to take me out to that moment where she got me to stop and look and say, you know, Jesus is the peace in the midst of the storm. And to realize that. And I think that in those situations, that's the most important thing. But it takes, sometimes for us, is that we don't do that. We need someone to help us see that.
Well, you've been living there in Vanuatu for several years, and it sounds like Rita has helped you adjust to your new home country there in Vanuatu and also adjust to some of the challenges that you've gone through there as well. So it sounds like you have a healthy relationship and the two of you growing in your faith together.
Yeah, I think it's been a long journey. I think in every marriage, you know, you make a decision to make things work. You know, that things are rocky, I think, in every relationship. And certainly the cross-cultural issues we had very early on in the piece, there are a lot of them. And there are things that I had to understand, a lot of things I misjudged her for, where I had basically said, is this you or is this your culture? And I thought they were her. And in fact, it was her culture. Vanuatu culture is very, very particular, and you can only understand it once you've lived here for a certain period of time. And learning that culture over time is the only way you can survive here long term, and adapting who you are as a person, which I've had to do certainly over the last 18 years to survive here and be married and bring up three beautiful children that we have.
Wow. So the Lord brought the two of you together. It's beautiful. And I'm thinking maybe we should introduce our wives to each other at some point. What do you think?
I think that'd be great. I think that anybody who lives through a cross-cultural relationship can identify with all those differences and tell lots of stories.
Yeah, I think they'll have some stories to tell about us.
Yeah, maybe we don't put those stories live to air, huh?
Maybe not. Okay, well, thank you so much, Michael McLennan in Vanuatu, for sharing your story with us today.
And thank you for inviting me onto the show and letting me share my story to everyone. Thank you.
That was Michael McLennan coming to us from the island paradise of Vanuatu in the South Pacific. But as we heard, even an island paradise has severe storms from time to time. And that was certainly the case in 2015 when Vanuatu was battered by Cyclone Pam, which was one of the most intense tropical cyclones in the South Pacific. Michael and his wife Rita certainly went through an intense and scary experience. But as Michael shared, Rita helped calm him and their faith in God helped them get through it. Well, it was great to hear Michael and Rita's story and how a Christian radio station started in part because of their marriage. But that is not the only marriage connected to Michael's father, Graham, that resulted in a radio station being started. Next time, Tabitha Pandy, who's also from Orange, will share how a short-term missions trip to Nepal resulted in her meeting her future husband, BJ. All that and more is coming up next time, right here on Real Faith.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.